Hispanics generate $2.3 trillion. That's the size of the economy. If Hispanics would be a standalone economy, we'd be the eighth largest nation in the world. It's huge. And not only that, that will continue to happen because we're not only a lot of people, but we're super young.
Welcome to the Women on the Move podcast from JPMorgan Chase. I'm Sam Saperstein. Women on the Move is a global initiative designed to empower female employees, clients, and consumers to build their careers, grow their businesses, and improve their financial health. Each episode will feature successful and inspiring women who are breaking the mold. They're sharing their career journeys and leadership lessons, talking about their professional and personal goals, and making a difference in the lives of others. This season, I'm taking you to the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, where I caught up with many of the women who inspire me every day. Today's guest has 25 years of experience driving social change. Claudia Romo Edelman is the founder of We Are All Human and is a thought leader on the Hispanic community and its role in the economy. She was the head of public relations at the World Economic Forum and has served as a special advisor to UNICEF and the United Nations. In this episode, Claudia talks about the role that Hispanics play in the U.S. and the challenges they face. I'm excited to share my conversation with Claudia and hope you enjoy it. So, Claudia, thank you so much for joining us with this Women on the Move podcast. We really appreciate your being here. So you've had a very impressive career in a variety of prominent nonprofits, charity organizations, intergovernmental organizations like the World Economic Forum, where we are now, the UN and UNICEF. Tell me about your journey and your career.
First of all, thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor to be able to talk to you. And I love actually that you have a Woman on the Move. I love that topic when that, like, the theme and the name inspires me as action and is results, and it's what we do. We move and we achieve and we move again. We just have to hold hands tighter until we move together. I started my career, you know, like as a diplomat, as a fact. I was the youngest member of the Foreign Affairs Service for Mexico when I was placed in a number of positions in Europe particularly. And then from there, I got bored and I realized very quickly that government was not an area where I could be permanently, but I learned that partnering with governments was going to be very, very important. So I started as a diplomat, moved on to be a press correspondent. I was a journalist, and I think that that's essential for anyone that wants to actually understand global affairs, to be able to report on them in a way that makes sense, to connect the dots. Right. And then from there, straight on into global and multilateral affairs. So started working for the World Economic Forum for 10 years. Fascinating time, started bringing partnerships, started bringing non-for-profits on board to the World Economic Forum and celebrities and getting more actors into the equation. From there, I moved into more humanitarian affairs, the United Nations Refugee Agency, the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria, where I was part of the launch of Product Red. And so always on the marketing side of social causes. Those were 25 years until I moved to America 5 years ago, where I learned that I was a Hispanic. I never knew that I was a Hispanic. I grew up being a happy Mexican, you know, like it's only when you move to America that they use this label. I was a Hispanic working for the Secretary General when we launched the Sustainable Development Goals. And I was in charge of communication and advocacy for that, working for UNICEF. And that's where I started understanding the next big wave will be about diversity and inclusion.
What do you think it was about the U.S. culture that made that so apparent to you, that made it feel so different to you?
It's just that in America, there's this label called Hispanics or Latino, Latina, which is something that you normally don't use in your country or where you live abroad. And I think that that packaging, if you want, is something that Hispanics themselves have not used to their advantage. So we're never born Hispanics, but when you move to America, you become one. So let's use it to our advantage and let's get together and let's utilize that sense to become a community, to exercise the full power that the Hispanic community has in America that has not realized its own value and its own power.
And talk more about that, because you've written extensively about the power that the Hispanic community does have. And I want to read a little bit about some of your own words. So you've said, we are doctors, CEOs, astronauts, academics, lawyers, and entrepreneurs. And by 2020, nearly a quarter of the U.S. economy will benefit from our contributions. We are more more than those people who perform the jobs no one else wants. We have 1.7 trillion of annual purchasing power. That is amazing.
Yeah, it's just crazy. When I moved to America, I was very happy to be part of this group Hispanics because, you know, like after living in Austria and Germany and you know, like places where I felt really like a minority, I felt like, this is amazing. I'm going to be part of the majority. I'm going to be part of those 60 million people, 18% of the population, 12% of the GDP. Hispanics generate $2.3 trillion. That's the size of the economy. If Hispanics would be a standalone economy, would be the eighth largest nation in the world.
It's huge.
It's huge. And not only that, that will continue to happen because we're not only a lot of people, but we're super young. Hispanics are 29 years old in average. That's 6 years younger than the rest of America. Latinas, 26 years old. We look young because we're young. But the most important data that I want you to remember is the most common age. Mm-hmm. The most common age for Hispanics is 11 years old. Hmm. The most common age for non-Hispanics, 58. So when
that
I learned
remarkable.
That, I was like, this is crazy. We're the future,
right.
Seriously, literally. We're going to be paying the Social Security, the Medicare, the, you know, the taxes, the people that are going to be using your credit cards in the future. This is a community that is massive, but think small. And it's powerful, but actually is seen as weak. So I started realizing that we don't have a problem. We just have a perception problem. We have a reverse marketing issue because Hispanics are generating like crazy and producing and are the future of the middle class of America. But there are issues that they have not seen. We're underrepresented, we're misrepresented and undervalued. And if I may, I want to share with you the three insights that I learned over the years that I started looking at that data. The first most important data point is that Hispanics are fragmented. So they're not a community. The Cubans don't talk to the Mexicans, don't talk to the Venezuelans, don't talk to that. And because of that fragmentation, they think small. So it's even worse. So because of that, there's a sense of blindness. The second most important thing is that they are blind about their own power. 77% of Hispanics have no idea of the data that I just shared with you. If you ask any Hispanic, do you know that Latinas create 6 times faster than any other group in America, small businesses, they might not know, but we need them to know. And the other thing is that Hispanics don't feel they can be themselves at the workplace. So if you're Jorge, you pretend to be George. Mm. And if you're Maria, you actually try to become as American as you can so that you can blend in. And that is a massive problem, not only for Hispanics, but also for corporate America.
Right.
Because in a time in which unemployment is so low, Hispanics so young, migration so controlled, the talent war will be incredible.
Right.
And if you're not able to attract talent, if you're not able to retain talent, you're going to have a problem. And it's a problem for Hispanics because they don't bring their best selves to work. They don't bring their hardworking, aspirational, loud, optimistic selves to work. They leave it at home and they bring someone that they don't even know to work. So that's what inspired me to create World Human, which is an organization devoted to advance diversity and inclusion in order to achieve equity.
Each one of those facts are remarkable, but taken together, and your point that even the Hispanic community isn't aware of some of those things, where do you start? How do you start educating the community before even going outside?
Well, what I started looking at is what are the assets that we have, what are the gaps that we have, and where can I bring value? And what I realized is having have 25 years of experience as a global international experienced person, I've seen communities thrive with half of what the Hispanic community has. But it all starts with being united. So that's what I did. Started calling Hispanics to be united. Being united and having a shared agenda about what matters for us, what we want to do. I have to admit, Latinas and women are at the driving seat of having that unification that is on their way. Pretty much like the other communities that you and I have seen, for example, the Chinese and the Japanese, they cannot have more historical differences.
Right.
And nevertheless, when they need to have a shared agenda and advocate for themselves, they are Asian society and they go for scholarships, entry to universities, etc. The same way, Hispanics have to have a shared agenda about what they want. So we gathered the community, the leaders responded, and we came up with the 3 points of our shared agenda that people say, like, yeah, that's it. If we manage to do these three things, this is going to be transformational for our future. And those are education, number one, so having scholarship, mentorships, internships. The number two is financial empowerment. Latinos want wealth. They want to access money, but they don't know how to do it, so financial literacy is key. And the other one is access to capital. We are entrepreneurs by definition. We start a little kitchen here. We start a little business on the right, particularly Latinas. 50% of all the entrepreneurs in America of Hispanics are Latinas, but they don't have access to capital to scale up. So they stay on 2 to 3 employees. And that's where the issue is. And the third and last point of this agenda, which is the one that we're taking action on, is the change of perception. We're fed up of being invisible. We're tired of being seen negatively. We are astronauts. We are academics. We are entrepreneurs. We're not criminals. We're not takers. We are makers. And we want to be seen, heard, and valued, because America is made of stars, and Hispanics are one of them.
That's great. So go back to when you were younger. I understand you had a very personal tragedy. You were in an earthquake in Mexico. And I'd love for you to tell us that story and tell us how that really impacted you and led you to do what you do today.
I think that everybody has one story that you can go back to that defines who you are and what we do, what you do in the future, and that's mine. When I was a teenager, there was a massive set of earthquakes in Mexico City, and so pretty much the entire city collapsed. It was the hardest, longest natural catastrophe that Mexico ever experienced, and so everyone went into the streets, first of all for safety, but then to volunteer to try to find your family, to try to find your friends. I was a teenager. And the only teenager among this group of volunteers that were sweeping the streets trying to see whether there were people on their, you know, like trapped on their buildings. And so I was walking and I had the feeling that I heard a voice, but I was not really sure about it. And people were walking and walking. We had so many streets to cover. And nevertheless, there was something in my gut that pushed me to scream out loud my lungs, like, stop, stop. So I started actually just shouting. And people started turning back and looking at me, and I couldn't stop shouting and louder, come back, come back, come back, until, you know, like I got like 20 people. And by then, whether they were doubting me or not, we were able to hear that there was someone trapped there.
Wow.
And after hours of pushing that big wall, you know, like we were able to push it and move it and move it until there was this moment in which the light started coming in and I saw the eyes, dusty eyes of this little girl, 6-year-old, that looked at me and said, like, you caught me, right? And that was the first ever time in my life, in my entire life, where I felt useful. And that I had that feeling that I wanted to feel that again and again. But also, it was the first time that I realized, you know, my entire life, my father and everybody complained that I was too loud. Oh my God, you're so loud, you're so loud.
And look what and good use you put it to.
That makes sense. I was like, that's it. This is it. I should actually quiet who I am. I should just use who I am and do the things that I can do, which is bring attention to things that people maybe wouldn't know and wouldn't notice. And when I saw that girl hug her mom, I felt, yes, this is it. I want to keep on shouting. And I want to keep on being loud,
right,
so that I can do that again and again.
That is remarkable. I mean, what a story. Life, you literally saved a life, a young life. And everything you're doing now seems to be so similar. You are pushing walls to save people or to make sure that they progress.
By being very loud, which is something that I am.
That sounds good to me. So let's talk about We Are All Human.
Yes.
And what your specific goals are for this. You've talked about other goals and bringing the community together, but outline again, you know, what the specific goals are now for this group.
We're All Human is a very young organization set up in America less than 2 years ago, and we couldn't be more proud about the progress that we have made. Not only the 150 companies that have signed the Hispanic Promise for Hispanics, and we're aiming actually to get to the Fortune 500, maybe not next year, but in the next 2 years. We want to be able to incite incite collective action be by creating content. We have a podcast called the Global Goals Cast that talks about the stories of the champions making a difference and celebrating the progress we're making, because we're bombarded by negative news. But at the end of the day, there's a great deal of hope and a great deal of leaders and champions making a difference. And we have to celebrate that we're pushing the needle. Maybe not enough, but everybody wants to be in the winning team, and we have to inspire young people to come and join us. So we create content, we create community, we come and events like this to kick off events with optimism, getting networks of support so that people know that they are not alone. So through content, through community, we're incentivizing collective action. On the Hispanic front, we want to get to 10 million Hispanics by this year, that they know that they are Hispanic stars, that they see this campaign, that they wear the t-shirt. We want to have 100 companies in America activating the Hispanic star during Hispanic Heritage Month, and we want to get a group of over 10,000 young ambassadors, Hispanic ambassadors, that are going to speak about the beauty of Hispanics in America.
And go out to their communities and
do
this
wherever they can. And go out to their communities. There you go.
Now, We Are All Human is a really interesting name. How did you come to that? What does that mean to you?
We are making progress in the world. There's no doubt that the numbers, the macro data, indicate that everything is getting better. We have every time more access to electricity, every time more access to education, vaccination. Everything is pointing towards, maybe not as fast as we want, but we are in the right trajectory. Nevertheless, there are two things that really concern me, and one of them is climate change, because that might be irreversible. But the other one is that we're forgetting that we belong to the same human family. And because technology with algorithms bubbles you and puts you into just getting the information that you want to hear and just putting yourself into that every time smaller circle of information, then when you come out of that bubble, you're like, ah, who is that other? And that growing sense of the otherness is the only thing that could actually derail the progress that we're making as humanity. Because you might say that other doesn't have the right for education, that other, it shouldn't be in the same place that I am. And that has an incredible risk of actually getting to places where we are right now with Brexit, with nationalism, with populism, with people that are extremely upset because we have forgotten that we do belong to the same human family, that if there would be an earthquake, the way that I saw it, it wouldn't make any difference whether you're rich or poor or Republican or Democrat, whether
out there, trying to
there
help.
You go. No. It will take us all.
Yes.
It
yes,
makes
yes.
no difference, because when you're born, you don't see those labels. So we have to create that muscle, train that muscle of remembering that we're part of the same human families.
Right.
If you're not used to actually having a conversation with someone that doesn't believe what you are, you're missing an opportunity to train that muscle.
Yeah.
So it's all about having that sense through content, community, and else that we're doing to try to remind us precisely of that, that we are all human.
So what do you think people can do literally today and tomorrow to take action on this? How can we get out of our bubble? How can we gain proximity to other people not like us? What do you think people can do every day, no matter who they are?
First of all, just campaign towards eliminating racism and discrimination and xenophobia, like literally. The same way my first ever campaign was tobacco, and I remember that everyone in my family and my friends said, like, there's never going to be a world in which tobacco will be banned or socially unacceptable. It was so cool and so aspirational. And throughout the years, we made
really
it.
Changed.
It's legally forbidden, it's socially uncool, and individually you feel bad about it. The same should be the trajectory for racism and discrimination. We should actually be open about it and understand that respect is a higher value than honesty when it comes to actually offending someone else, that we have to push the needle from tolerance to acceptance. We're too bright in this world to say, like, I tolerate you and that's enough. We should be accepting of people. And so what you could do is actually be open when someone is saying something that you don't agree with, and as opposed to actually being rejecting, living in that tension. Tension is super healthy when it comes to dialogue. We should actually be able to have those dialogues where you're uncomfortable in the way, so that we don't go into the extremes, which is what's happening with the political narrative right now.
Yeah.
So we have to come to the center. We have to listen to someone else's opinion and actually surprise yourself by going to places where you don't normally go.
Yeah, and I like what you said about living with someone else's opinion. You might not like it, You don't have to like it, but you have to have the same respect for them that you would for other people, and hopefully through that dialogue come to some other ground.
Absolutely.
Ground with each
absolutely.
Other. So tell us about when you were starting this organization, you know, as many women do, starting a new company and organization, who helped you at an early stage or gave you a piece of advice that you really hang on to today?
Many, I would say, but my mother, who's my biggest hero and mentor, she always told me that women had it harder, but had it better. So you had to be an acrobat and you had to be a torero. And that meant that you had to learn how to juggle, because we will juggle. So juggle gracefully from the beginning. Be sure about that. Don't even question it, but be sure and learn how to juggle properly. And the other one is never let any bull take you, but just let things pass. Don't take anything personally. Anything that can come can go. And so when you don't engage in things, when someone is actually being sexist or it didn't allow me to be anything, I would like, probably it's his problem. Probably he has a constipation. Probably something like that. You know, like, probably my boss is constipated or something.
A lot of the time. That's great. I mean, that is very powerful. Do you teach that now to others around you, that people you mentor?
Well, my daughter, for example, I think that she's the one person that I would like to see feeling proud and empowered and being able to use so much of what we have learned and we have gained as women, which is be able to self-advocate, be able to hang with each other. My grandmother used to say that there is a special place in heaven for women that support each other.
I hope
that, you know, like my daughter and other kids in that generation will learn that and hold hands and break the glass together.
So I want to talk a little bit about your partnership with Arianna Huffington's organization, Thrive Global. So you're her editor at large and you're launching Thrive Hispanics. So what will that work do to help you further tell the story?
Arianna is the greatest. I love Arianna, and anyone that has the blessing of surrounding her and being blessed by her mentorship knows what I'm saying.
Like, she really jumps off the page, so to speak.
And she's the most generous person with her time, with her saying it as it is. She would be the person that says, like, you have something in between your teeth, or, you know, like, she's that person that's like not gonna let you fail.
Right.
She doesn't let her people up for failure. And so when she started Thrive and she started talking about how important it is for us to be able to disconnect and actually chose to go back to being human and not only a working machine,
right?
Because we're burning out. And that is the case of Latinas. Latinas work so hard. 86% of every single job in America has been created since the Great Recession, has been created by Hispanics, 50% of those by Latinas. That means that probably is you're going to have 2 to 3 jobs in order to actually keep it up. So you have your job, probably you have another one, and then on the Sundays you have a side entrepreneurial thing.
Right.
And the problem is that we're exhausted and we're burning out.
Yeah, and that is popping families up. And community and everything else.
And particularly for a community like Hispanics that cares so much about family and friends, not being able to connect really drips you apart. So when Arianna said, let's bring this platform for Hispanics, I was like, this is so necessary because they need role models. They need to see how other people do it. They need to know you give permission to work a tiny less. Ask for a raise better than working more.
Right.
Raise your voice so that you can rest a tiny bit more, so that you can learn to meditate, so that you can exercise, so that you can eat better, so that you can actually share the stories with other women, so that we can, as a collective, be better off.
Yeah.
We have incredible cases in Colorado. 40% of all the foster kids are Hispanics because their mothers are actually falling to substance abuse because of depression. So we have to catch these Latinas before they cross the line, and we have to help them thrive.
Yeah.
Because that's what we want. We want to thrive and we want to shine.
Of course. And look at that big family impact when you don't. And so what are the specific things you are advocating when it comes to self-care and just being smarter about how you work?
So one of them is to be able to negotiate. So every time I tell this to Latina, young Latinas, he's like, when someone tells you that you're a Latina and you shouldn't be here, tell them you're welcome for the 12% of your check that you get every month, because that's us. We're contributing 12% of the GDP. There's absolutely a lot of power on data when you can own it, when you know your value. So by knowing your data and then knowing how to talk about it, knowing how to negotiate, then you're going to be in a position to be able to speak. So we're giving a lot of training on what we call executive presence, but in reality, it's about public communication. It's about the brand called You. It's about networking for purpose, networking with pleasure, so that we can be in the room where it happens and we feel that we're valuable. The self-care comes from a self-worth. And so I think that data has a lot to do with that. And that's why I'm super excited about launching this campaign, The Hispanic Star, that will be followed by an education campaign on data. And again, the best of all is that we're all Hispanics doing it together. So I'm super excited about the ripple effect that this will have.
That is great.
Yeah. And also bringing on corporate America. That's our best friend.
Yes.
That's it. Corporate America is our best friend, and we trust you, we love you, but we want you in as well.
There's a huge need there, and I think a huge desire to make sure that the community is well integrated. Absolutely.
Hispanics are loyal. There's a stat that I love, which is first job, Hispanics last 41 to 45 months longer than non-Hispanics, because that's who we are.
That is very meaningful.
Exactly. Like, okay, go not only to Yale and to Harvard when you're hiring or recruiting, go to the University of Texas, go to Miami, go to Chicago, go to those places, because we're loyal, not only loyal employees, but also loyal consumers.
Right.
82% of Hispanics are saying that they would actually favor a brand if they would actually explain, like be explicit and be investing in the community that they operate in.
And what underlying messages do you think are the ones that the Hispanic community would most listen to and care about?
The most important pain point is that we're invisible. So that we're not seen. If there would be a company that says, I see you, I care for you, I'll invest on you, I'll give you an internship, I'll give you a mentorship, you know, like I'll give you access to credit, even though you don't have a credit history, I'll train you on financial literacy, I invest on your community. We're all hard workers. We just need opportunities and someone to see us and be explicit about saying, I am a Hispanic-friendly company, I care about the Hispanic community, I'll invest on you, I think you're stars.
That's so powerful, and I think it will go a long way, to your point. What progress or changes are you most excited about that you see today?
Oh my God, yes. The world is browner, more feminine, and with a bigger heart, for sure, and that the world is celebrating it. So when I started launching the Sustainable Development Goals and working on humanitarian issues like on CSR, I used to be in the corner room where no one would come, and there would be like the three people working in that space that actually would go to those sessions. We're totally mainstream. Like, we managed to actually move from the little corner to the big thing. It's almost like the tortilla effect. Do you know that theory?
Tell me, no.
Oh, I love that. It's an economic way of describing how a product makes it to mainstream.
Right.
So tortillas used to be on the last aisle in the supermarket, like the Mexican corner or the exotic food corner, whatever it is. But now it moved actually to be on the mainstream, in the main aisle, next to the bread. And so there's two reasons why something travels so much in a supermarket. One is because consumer demand.
Right.
So people are using tortillas for wraps, for tacos, for this, for that, for snacks. It's healthy, it's whatever. So consumers are pushing the tortilla to fly. But also, the owner of the stores decides to move one product to the other. And I think that that's actually what's happening with sustainability and purpose, that there's the two things. Consumers are buying with their beliefs, voting with their hearts. Millennials are actually going to be aligned with companies that matches their values, and they want to be on the organic side. They want to be on the green side. They want to be on the don't do evil side. But also at the same time, the decision makers of the world took a decision to do this. So that's actually what's happened with, you know, like my greatest thing that I'm excited about is we made it mainstream on sustainability. And it rocks to see everybody in Davos wearing the pin and celebrating
this year.
It's a theme.
It couldn't be bigger. So,
and watch out, the next theme will be diversity and inclusion. Like the next train. Let this mainstream go, but the next one is diversity and inclusion.
Well, we've been talking about that, it seems, for a few years on the side. Here we are at the Equality Lounge, and it's, you know, outside the official Congress, but I think we're all moving closer in that direction. So
women have led the way for the diversity, but the world is already pretty diverse. You know, like look around. We're already pretty diverse. What we have to do now is to make it more inclusive. so that we can all bring our best selves to whatever we're doing and so we can achieve equity. I just want to thank you so, so much. And I would like to invite you, your podcast, and your company to join this Hispanic journey. This is going to be a historic movement that will give birth to a community that not only deserves it, but is the future and the growth for America.
Well, thank you. JP Morgan Chase would love to partner with you.
Fantastic.
Appreciate that.
Super. Thank you so much. Great.
Thanks to Claudia for sitting down to talk through the mission of We Are All Human. It was fascinating to hear her insights and hear the story of how she launched the organization. Thank you for joining us today. The mission of Women on the Move is to help women in their professional and personal lives. Our goal is to introduce you to people with great ideas, inspiring stories, and a passion to make a difference. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe so you won't miss any others. Thank you to our partners at the Female Quotient and Magnet Media for helping us tell these stories. For JPMorgan Chase's Women on the Move, I'm Sam Saperstein.